So hi, I'm Yiting from Cornell, and I'm transitioning to Maryland this summer. So before going into my stories about superconductivity and the exciting material that we just heard from the previous speaker, monolayer TMDs, I want to first mention that the typical operation mode in this field of superconductivity has been that experimental discoveries came first, and then we try to understand all the exciting puzzles that came along with the experiments, starting from the discovery of superconductivity itself, and then the superfluidity in helium, and cuprate, and heavy fermion compounds, and ruthenates, and in the last decade, iron-based superconductors. These were all examples where experimental discoveries led to a theoretical puzzles or understandings. On the other hand, examples of the reverse order has been far less, where theoretical predictions can lead to experimental confirmation by guiding the experimental efforts. And this is simply because it's a very challenging task compared to, say, making predictions for semiconductors or band insulators, where we can understand them pretty well from the band theory perspective. Despite its hard, I think it will be very exciting if we can make predictions about where to find exotic superconductivity, and then actually see the realization of it one day. So here, in this talk, I'm gonna be talking about my recent efforts and be adventurous and trying to take the second route. So I found the opportunity to do so when I learned about this family of 2D direct gap semiconductors from my experimental friends in Dan Ralph's group. So group 4 monolayer TMDs, where this transition metal can be molybdenum or tungsten. I'll tell you a few things about why I think it's very interesting. Of course, we heard a lot from our previous speakers already. So first, the lattice is buckle tummy cone. This is the top view, and this is the side view. You can see that this lattice doesn't have inversion symmetry simply by looking at this. So this guy doesn't have the inversion partner here. So it doesn't have inversion. Because of this, and because that your transition metal are 4D electrons instead of P electrons. Unlike graphene, there is a large spin orbit coupling in this material. And it's a special type. First of all, it aligns all the spins in the Z direction. So sometimes it's also dubbed icing spin orbit coupling. Second, it's orbital selective. It doesn't act on these Z square orbitals. And this has a huge impact on the low energy band structure, because the conduction band is mostly made of dz squared, whereas your valence band is mostly made of dxy and dx squared minus y squared. So as you can see in the picture here, the conduction band is nearly spin degenerate, whereas your valence band, there is a large spin split at, say, k is up, down, k prime is down, up. So it preserves time-reversal symmetry. So actually, in the past few years, there has been lots of efforts trying to exploit this spin-orbit coupling in the semiconductor point of view, transport optics in the application-driven community. For example, because of this spin-orbit coupling, your spin and valley degrees of freedoms are coupled to each other. So there are not only spin, but also valley Hall effects in this material. Moreover, you can use the circular polarized light to control these degree of freedom selectively. But what, besides this spin orbit coupling, what excites me most is that this material is superconducting upon electron doping. So in 2012, molybdenum disulfide was seen superconducting in Professor Iwasa's group with a TC more than 10K. And following that, there are more other members in this material that has been seen superconducting. So what do we know? What do we know about the superconductivity upon hold, electron doping? First of all, it has a large in-plane critical field. And this is just a demonstration of the so-called icing spin orbit coupling, because the spin is aligned in the z direction. And you can see that it's several times larger than the, it's hard to see, the Pauli limit. And as for the pairing symmetry, not a lot is known for sure. But one thing we know is that the parity mixing is allowed because of the broken inversion. To be more specific, let's look at the character table. So TMD's monolayers belongs to C3V. And you can see that for each irreducible representation, your singlet and triplet components can mix. For example, in the trivial representation, S wave and a nodeless F wave can mix. Whereas in the there is a two-dimensional representation, your D wave and P wave can mix. So far, the observed superconductivity were all on the electron dope side. But you see, there's this large spin split in valence band. So I wondered, what if we can lightly hold dope it such that your chemical potential lies within this spin split? Then what I'm going to get is I'll have one spin up pocket at K, one spin down pocket at K prime. I only have two pockets instead of four. And these two pockets are strictly spin value locked. So now the question is, what kind of superconductivity can I get out of this? Will it be advantageous for exotic superconductivity? So let's look at this way. If I have spin degenerate Fermi surface, then the superconductor that I'm going to get is probably just singlet, just like most of the superconductors we have right now. But if I can split the spin degeneracy in real space, just like what we have in 3D TIs, in 3D TIs on the opposite surfaces, you have opposite spin windings. And these are real space separated spinless fermions. In 2008, Fu and Kim made a proposal that if you take one of the surface and proximatize it with an S-wave superconductor, then you're going to get topological superconductivity. Now, what if you can split the spin degeneracy in momentum space? Then this is exactly just the case I have for lightly hold-doped TMD. So due to the Fu-Kim case, I will have momentum-separated spinless fermions. Is it going to be just topological just like the Fu-Kim case? And also, imagine a case where you can form pairs within the pocket. Then these are finite momentum pairs. It's going to have a modulation in real space. If these both of these are true, then it's doubly good. So in the following, I'm going to talk about our predictions for the intrinsic pairing and the proximity-induced pairing in lightly hold-doped TMD. So let's first start with intrinsic pairing. These are my collaborators. And now the first thing I want to predict is, what's the pairing symmetry for the intrinsic superconductivity? To do so, I need to first have a sense of what the pairing mechanism is. So transition metal has d electrons. So we expect a moderate electronic repulsion, naively. And in this paper, these authors, they actually estimated at the magnitude of the effective pairing interactions in this material from the electron phonon and from Coulomb. And they concluded that electronic repulsions can be the dominant source for superconductivity, which means that the mechanism is Kohn-Luttinger. And that implies unconventional superconductivity, and that's exciting. And the theoretical tool I'm going to use is the two-step weak coupling RG, which was developed by the Stanford group several years ago. And it had been recently applied to ruthenase. And we have a paper on strained ruthenase using this exact method. So within that procedure, what I'm mainly doing, the main task, is to calculate the effective interaction in the Cooper channel near the Fermi surface. So I have to consider two possibilities. One is the intra-pocket pairing. The other, the inter-pocket pairing. And these wiggly lines just means the interactions G intra and G inter. So Q and Q prime are the incoming outgoing momenta on the Fermi surface with respect to the valley centers K and K prime. So here I make an assumption that my pockets are circular. And that makes sense because I'm assuming light doping. Then I can write G's in terms of the theta and do an angular decomposition such that I arrive at interactions in different partial wave channels L tilde, where this L tilde is not with respect to gamma, but with respect to K and K prime. And then these are the contributions that I need to include for my G inter and G intra, which involves two loop corrections. And then after doing the calculation, this is my result. I find the lambda for inter and intra pocket with L tilde equals to 1 to be most negative. And that means that the dominant pairing channels are inter and intra pocket L tilde equals to 1 pair states. These two guys are degenerate, but that's an artifact due to that I'm assuming the pockets to be circular. And I will address more on this degeneracy later. So if you don't like this L tilde notation, then we can also use the usual notation that this inter L equals to 1 is P plus D wave, which belongs to the two-dimensional representation E, whereas the intra pocket L equals to 1 is just a spinless P wave. And from the energetics, because there are two components, so I expect them to be chiral. And because they're chiral, they're also topological. So after doing all the calculations, we realized that there is an alternative way, which is much easier to arrive at the same conclusion. So there is this beautiful paper by Trubukov in 93, where he did the Kolmatovich calculation for a 2D spin Fermi liquid with a single spin degenerate pocket. He found that the largest attraction appears in P wave with L equals to 1. And then we realized that I can actually map this system to our TMD problem. There's actually a one-to-one correspondence for each possible pairing channel. And so I can directly read out what he did and then put it in our setting with the correct physical interpretation. And then I found the same conclusion. So here's a summary of these two dominant topological pair state, where for the inter pocket, it's a mixture of singlet and triplet because I only have spin up here and spin down on minus k, so it cannot be just singlet or just triplet. It has to be a mixture of them. And it's chiral P plus D, and it's topological with turn number 2. And as for the intra, it's equal spin pairing, so it's triplet. And it's chiral P wave, and it's topological with turn number 1 per pocket. Moreover, it has a phase modulation at 2k, which is similar to the so-called FF state. So as for the balance between inter and intra, in reality, of course, the pockets are not circular. There should be a small amount of the trigonal warping, which will suppress the intra, so it promotes the inter. Whereas there's also ways to promote the intra. For example, you can grow it on a ferromagnetic substrate. And this is a DFT calculation, which shows that the exchange coupling promotes the spin-up bend such that you can only you only have one pocket that's intersecting with the chemical potential. So intra is the only possibility that you can have. So now we concluded that intrinsic is topological. Let me briefly mention the proximity-induced pairing. So here are my collaborators. And to have a proximity proposal, I need to first decide what kind of superconductors do I want to use. So this is the character table again. You can see that P and D mix, which means that if I provide D wave pairing, maybe I can induce P wave, which is a very exciting thing to do. So why don't we use cuprate? So besides inducing P wave component, another good thing about cuprate is obviously the possibly high TC. And in very recent experiments, people have detected high TC superconductivity in graphene or tantalum disulfide that's proximitized by cuprate. So if this all works out really fine, maybe we can dream of high TC odd parity pairing. But then I need to do some confirmation of these gases. Unfortunately, I don't know how to calculate TC for unconventional superconductors, but I can yeah, right. Go do the measurement. So, but then I can try to calculate to confirm that there really is a P-wave component. So this is my model for cuprate, includes up to next nearest neighbor, and I have a spin degenerate large hole pocket. And for my monolayer TMD, I use the two-band model with complex hopping so that there is a staggered field in each pocket. And then the spin up and spin down parts are conjugate of each other, such that it has time reversal symmetry. So that this is the Fermi surfaces that I'll get. A spin up pocket and a spin down pocket that have spin valley locking. And then to introduce microscopic interlayer tunneling, I make an assumption where these two lattices, they string each other, such that they share a shared lattice, looks like that. And then I introduce up to next nearest neighbor tunneling. So I can write down my mean field Hamiltonian for the bilayer, where psi's are cuprate, phi's are TMDs, and the normal part just includes terms I just talked about. And my pairing term includes up to next nearest neighbor pairing in cuprate. Then I self-consistently just solve the gap equation. Where I can obtain finite TMD amplitude, pair amplitude. So here is the result. So the orange are positive, blue are negative, and you can see that in this direction with respect to gamma, it's plus minus, it looks odd. So that already tells you that there is an odd parity component. And then these dashed lines are nodal lines, which crosses the Fermi surface, so we know that there's it's nodal and it's in the partial wave L equals to 1. And I plot the even and odd parity component out. You can see that it's B wave and P wave indeed. And it only has a single component, so it's nomadic. So I concluded that the induced pairing in TMD by cuprate is nomadic P plus D. And because I'm running out of time, so I'll just leave you with my conclusions.
Very nice talk. So I'm curious about this intranodal pairing FF state. It has a pair density wave like. So would you expect some Marana zero modes at the dislocation of this? The companion density wave order, or which binds the half vortex of the superconducting order?
So that's a very good question. So we expect, naively expect that I will have one spin up Marana from the spin up part and spin up pairs, and one from the spin down pairs. Yeah, but they so because there is no time reversal symmetry, but there is this SZ is good quantum number. So if I count on that, they won't mix. But there's always, of course, an experiment is like Rochebach that will mess that up.
I mean, spatially you can separate these by creating half vortices.
Yes, but say half vortices. If you want half vortices, in this case, you need both inter and intra to come in, because now the up up down down and up down plus down are there. There are two, these are belongs to this intra and inter, two species. I cannot use of that. So I don't think there's going to be half vortex.
I have a couple of comments / questions. One is, even in the conduction band, mm-hmm. these TMDs, there is a spin orbit splitting. It's smaller right. by an order of magnitude,
right.
but still 20 millivolts is a pretty big number when you're considering typical superconducting gaps. So that's just a comment. So maybe one should already look for this in some way, in even on the electron dope side. The other thing is that if you actually do this TMD on cuprate, one additional, in real life, of course, the lattices won't be matched. So there will be a coupling that's actually spatially modulated with a certain wavelength. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And perhaps this makes life even more entertaining. Would you like to speculate?
Hopefully that's the case. Yeah, so I want to address the first comment a little bit. So just like what he just said, there's of course also a small splitting in the conduction band, and but it's very small. I heard it's very hard to tune your chemical potential like within that little gap. And but then there is also another advantage of that is that I know learned from my experimental friends that whole dope is hard for these materials, but it's not impossible. So you can like weigh the whether you want to try to dope it or try to tune the chemical potential. Yeah.
It's on the Kohn-Lattinger part of the story. I presume that a screening in a single layer is fairly poor. So the interaction is more like a poorly screened Coulomb potential. How would this change the story about pairing into L equal to one state? And how would it bring the energy scales for this pairing?
So can you repeat? So you're saying something about interlayer?
So you looked at Howard U.
Okay.
In a single layer. From Lattinger to pockets, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, it's probably more like a poorly screened Coulomb potential, which is long-ranged.
Uh-huh.
How would this change the story?
You mean when my Coulomb...
On pairing in Kohn-Lattinger.
You mean that it becomes smaller?
Interaction going from...
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So when it becomes... Yes. I haven't done that calculation, but... So I cannot comment much on it. Except the properties that... That's dictated by symmetry, like the parity mixing. So I cannot comment much on that.
We still have time for questions.
Oh, and by the way, I just didn't have time to say that. We did have a series of the experimental proposal for how to detect these states. So just in case anyone is interested in that, you can talk to me privately or you can ask questions. Yeah.
Okay, since there's no question, let me ask one. For the electron dope, the case, suppose your Fermi energy is not between these two splitted bands. Suppose, so this is more comply with the experimental situation. Apply the same machinery as you have done.
Right.
You will predict some paired state.
Right.
Does that agree with the current experiment?
So I'm not too sure about actually what's the experimental evidence for the pairing symmetry so far. But people have assumed it's fully gapped, I think. And so I didn't do the calculation, but I think depends on the mechanism. So if it's electron phonon, then of course it's S wave. But if it's really coming from this Kohn-Lattinger, it's gonna be F wave. But this F wave is the fully gapped F wave. So it's very similar to S plus minus. It's just that now your pocket is at K and minus K. And I think that doesn't contradict with the current experiment that is fully gapped. And but then I think more experiments for detecting, say, parity, for instance, needs to be done to make sure of that.
Okay. Are there any more questions? Well, if not, lunchtime.